Welcome to the 5511 Podcast, inspiring stories of God's power being poured out globally in the lives of ordinary people. Hosted by Dirk Smith and Brooke Kell. This podcast is supported by EEM. EEM publishes, prints, and distributes Bibles and Bible-based materials in 30-plus nations and in 20-plus languages, free to all.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of 5511. I'm here with Dirk Smith, and my name is Brooke Kell. And today, we have a really special guest, one of our own colleagues, and his name is Oleg Yakimenko, and he serves as the national coordinator for Russia and Belarus. So we're just going to jump right in, and I'm going to introduce you, Oleg. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, man. Good to have you with us.
Yeah. Hello. Hello. Good to see you and good to be with you.
Yeah. Really, really excited to have you with us all the way from St. Petersburg, Russia, which is we're spanning the miles here. Technology, you got to love it when it works. So it's good to see you. So for our listening audience, kind of give us a little background on you, personal, married, kids, grandkids, all that good stuff.
Well, just this year, I turned 50 years old. I'm married. I have a good wife named Natasha. And we have two grown sons. Actually, I'm a grandparent. We are grandparents of two grandchildren. So a precious little granddaughter and a grandson.
Yeah, I'm jealous, man. I'm 60 and I don't even have any of those yet. I got to start talking to my kids. Something's wrong here. Yeah, that's great. Yes. And you do have a lovely wife. Natasha is a fantastic lady. Yeah, you married up, buddy. You married above yourself, and that's good. That's always good.
Definitely. I'm going to just give a little bit more background about you too. So now Oleg, for our listening audience, coordinates the EM work in Russia and the countries of Central Asia and Transcaucasia. He also has a master's degree in teaching and translation of English and German languages and in New Testament theology. Oleg obeyed the gospel in 1993 and is passionate about spreading God's word. In 1997, Oleg moved from Eastern Ukraine to Russia and worked as an evangelist with the local Church of Christ in St. Petersburg. And as Oleg mentioned, he is married to his wife, Natasha, and he has two adult sons with two grandchildren.
Correct.
Yes. Good to have you with us. Tell us how you came to faith. And I've kind of heard this story, but I'd love for you to share it. And the story of you getting your first Bible.
Yeah, well, actually, I was born in the Soviet Union. So unfortunately, I was one of the many people in the Soviet Union who did not have a children's Bible. So actually, I knew nothing about Jesus Christ till 16 years old. By the way, I was born in the city of Magadan, which is northeast of Russia. And this city, the name of the city is notorious. When I say the name of the city where I'm from, everybody from the Soviet Union says, the prison, they say, because it was a part of the Gulag prison system of the Soviet Union. A lot of people were exiled there. My parents moved there just to work because there were better pace. There was gold mining as well, done by the state, obviously, but still a better pace attracted some people to go there. The climate is harsh, very harsh. So we kind of laugh that there are three cold months in a year. The rest are very cold. So my parents moved from that area to Eastern Ukraine, and I was 16 years old. I was about to complete the high school. And the whole Soviet Union was about to collapse. It was, I think, 1989. So everything was changing. The world was changing, actually, for us. And we were looking for some answers. I mean, just we, a lot of people were looking, were searching. And I remember reading at that time the novel Master and Margarita. It's a novel by the Russian author Mikhail Bulgakov. And he narrates the story of Jesus. It's not exactly the biblical story, but it has a biblical idea, and it's narrated as an analogy to the main character of the book, who is a genius writer who is not recognized by his people around him.
What's the name of the book again? What's the name of the book?
Master and Margarita, Mikhail Bulgakov.
Okay.
And I was attracted to find out more about Jesus. This is how I first came to know at least more details about Jesus than I had ever known at that time. And it just happened so that the same year, in 1989, my schoolmate, my classmate, he found a Bible, a real Bible. We knew nothing about the Bible. He found it in the street. Someone probably forgot it somewhere. The cover was torn off, but it was printed somewhere either in Austria or in Germany, because I remember the German words. I can't say it was EEM Bible, but it had some German words. So it somehow got to the Soviet Union. And we decided to read the Bible. Since we had no idea about the contents, we heard at that time that it was not just a book of Christianity, about something connected with Christianity, but also a book of prophecies. And it was important to us. And we heard rumors that the best book to start reading, guess what, the best book was to start the book of Revelation.
Wow.
Yeah. Because it was the book of prophecies, we were told. It had something to say about Michael, which is in Russian Mikhail, the president of the country at that time, Mikhail Gorbachev. And the book said something about Mark on his forehead. So we were eager to start reading, and we started. And soon enough, we just dropped it because we couldn't make any sense out of it. It was a bizarre reading, saying something about some strange people, some strange beasts, and all kinds of stuff. We had no idea, no clue what it was all about.
What a place to start. Nothing like jumping into apocalyptic language right off the bat. That'll cure anybody.
Yeah. So just a couple of years later, I met missionaries in the college where I studied to become a professional translator and teacher of foreign languages. And they gave me a real New Testament to read and pointed me to the gospel story, because I wanted to know really about Jesus. All that time, those years, I was thinking, what kind of person that Jesus was. I was interested, intrigued. And the missionaries made some impact on me because I saw a difference in them. So I was glad to start reading and finding out more about Jesus. I had a lot of questions. It took about a year for me to finally become a believer and a follower of Christ. It was in 1993.
Yeah, wow.
At those times, a lot of missionaries came to the former Soviet Union. And at that time, it was already a separate, independent Ukraine, an independent country. Since I was Russian, but I studied in Ukraine, so I became a Ukrainian citizen at that point. And the missionaries came, and they needed translators. I was eager to help them as a student, who spoke English. It was about 10 days of the evangelistic campaign to plant a church, a new church in eastern Ukraine. And finally, on the last day almost, or maybe a day before they left, they said, okay, we need someone to guide this church and to teach this church. You, Oleg, will be the person. That's what they said. And I felt very frustrated because I had very little knowledge of the Bible. But they said, you know more than these people who were just baptized. You helped us translate and answer their questions many times. So they heard it once, you heard it many times. So you know better and more of the Bible. So I felt like, okay, I'm compelled to help because I'm a Christian now and this is God's calling. So they gave me some pamphlet, topical study pamphlet with passages. And I took a passage, I mean, I took a topic at a time and read the passages. And it was really hard for me to connect them all. Because, wow. And I was thinking, okay, how and why all of those passages are under the same topic? It was really hard, but we grew fast. We had to read, and we were reading the Bible at that time. So just a few months later, I knew much more about the Bible contents and what it said. And I'm happy that there was some challenge at that time.
Yeah, to have that challenge to better yourself or to dig deeper and to dig into God's word. Makes me wonder if maybe more people don't need that challenge today. You know, hey, you need to be, it kind of reminds me of Paul's statement saying, all right, you know, to the church in Corinth, man, you're drinking milk still. Mm-hmm. You need to be eating meat and you're still drinking milk. You know, there's a lot of us that are unfortunately limping along because the nourishment is not where it needs to be. And, we're not digging. Man, that's great.
I love the idea of how God can creatively position us to be discipled, even kind of while we're not realizing it. You were there at that time with those missionaries translating and you thought you were doing a great thing. And little did you know you were being set up. Yeah. To then take it from there. And yeah, there's nothing quite like learning on the go.
Yeah, that's
but
great.
But they were, I mean, the missionaries still played a great role for me to become a Christian. And also later, they set up studies for kind of preachers like me to learn more about the Bible, to study all the books of the Bible. So that was very helpful. And we grew fast, really. And this is how I came to be in St. Petersburg, really, because just a few years later, I was invited by missionaries to go to St. Petersburg. I was already married at that time. Natasha studied with me in the same college, and she also became a Christian. So we were ready to go and do some evangelistic work.
Yeah.
So my next question for you, Oleg, has to do with, after talking about your journey and getting your first Bible and kind of how your interest in Jesus was began, what would you say your role with EEM has to do with your faith journey and what you're doing now?
I think I joined EEM in 2013, so 10 years ago. At that time, I was thinking if, you know, the printed books were important, really, because as a teacher of the Bible, and also I saw many people using in a big city like St. Petersburg, digital Bibles. So And I thought, okay, is it important for me to distribute books that are printed? That was the question I remember. Obviously, I never doubted the value of the Bible, but the format, that was kind of a question. But then I realized how many people didn't have access to the digital Bibles, or people felt like a real book is that is printed, not in some virtual, you know, digital form. And it's true till this time, 10 years later, I see that a lot of people want to hold the sacred book in their hand, in their hands. So it was really important for me to share what I received, because reading the Bible and reading the story of Jesus kind of changed my life. I can't say I was an outcast of the society or something. I was moving along with the crowds in this country, but it definitely impacted me. It impacted my marriage life, me as a parent, me as a teacher and preacher of the Bible, and just in general, the worldview is quite different when you know the Bible, when you know the story of Jesus. So I wanted to share it. And distributing Bibles is the best way. I thought, okay, it's just the way to minister. And I continued the ministry. The church in St. Petersburg was very well established, and it's run by volunteers, the fellow brothers and sisters. So we served together, and it was good to switch to the area that where EM serves. I'm thrilled to do this ministry.
Yeah, it's good. So I know a question that probably a lot of our listening audience is going to have is, okay, man, he's in Russia, you know, all that's going on, and Russia's in the news and Ukraine's in the news and all that. What's the spiritual climate like in Russia right now? And how do you see, I mean, how do you see the church responding? How do you see, you know, the global church there responding to that spiritual climate?
Yeah, I can give you just a broad picture, just maybe for the sake of our audience, if they hear us or see us. Because Russia is a country, big country, obviously, maybe everybody knows that, but it's also a country with over 100 ethnic groups, so just different peoples who populate this country. And the various groups belong traditionally to different religions. I mean, before the Soviet Union, obviously, they adhered to either Christianity or Islam or Buddhism as the most traditional religions of Russia. So today, it's also true. Also, it's important to say that, of course, the most of the population is Slavic. So the Orthodox Church, the Russian Orthodox Church, plays a great role, has been playing a great role in this country. And some people say it's about 60-70%, some say 80%, because the Slavic people are the most, you know, the biggest group, ethnic group of this country. So they say, since you are Slavic, so you must be Orthodox, as in many countries with this some kind of state church. The Orthodox Church has close ties with the ruling powers of this country, and it has always been like that. So the Western or other churches of any kind are looked upon as Western sects or cults that have some ties with the West, and it's not easy to serve in the country where you know, the basically almost the state church. It's not a state church constitutionally, but it's basically a state church, the Russian Orthodox Church. These times are very, very peculiar, of course, with what is going on in Ukraine. And it's dividing people in Russia, just in general, and also dividing people even within churches, and even within one congregation, there is a division. And it breaks my heart to see what's going on, because we are attached to Ukraine. My wife is Ukrainian, Natasha, and also my father was, I mean, he is a Ukrainian. He's from the Poltava region, central Ukraine. My mother is Russian. So, and for many people in Russia, it's the same. We are so close. I mean, we have relatives, mm-hmm. friends. So it's just hard to explain what's going on and what we feel about the things. But the church, the bigger churches and church unions, they are challenged because there is some pressure that, you know, the government expects them to take sides in this political situation.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the unions, evangelical unions, you know, obviously voiced their opinion that they would go with the Russian government. Some others keep silence because they do not want to be, I mean, just do not want to say anything that would contradict their faith, or to lose maybe their followers. I don't know. It's a difficult challenge. But what I see in the ministry, because we deal with a lot of churches, a lot of pastors, church leaders, as a part of in the EM ministry, I see that Christians in Russia of different churches try to stay focused on serving God and sharing God's love with people. In general, not just the Christians, but the population in Russia, the people in Russia are at a loss. I mean, they're confused and they feel unsafe, insecure. It's not, the life is not stable. And so many people started searching again. Like, it's almost like a flashback for me to see what's going on right now, like in the past, in the 80s of the Soviet Union. So there is something to happen in the future, and people feel unsafe, feel the instability.
Yeah, and boy, we, you know, I get that. I mean, not at the level that you do, but I mean, it's always our tendency is as believers to focus too much on this earthly kingdom and the outside mm-hmm. influences, whether that's, you know, the politics that are at hand. I mean, we see it in the evangelical church here and in the church in the States, you know, too much politics spouted from pulpits, not enough Jesus. I mean, let's focus on Jesus, because he is the truth. I mean, he's it. And, you know, we all want to gravitate towards truth, and there's one truth. It's God. That's Jesus, you know, manifest, you know, God manifested in person through Jesus. So, yeah, I will have to say, you know, and you remember, I mean, when Brooke and I were there in Russia in 2019, I guess it was when we came.
Yeah.
I will say, and Brooke, I don't know. I mean, you might agree or disagree. I have never been any more warmly received than I was by the Russian people. And I don't mean just Christians. I mean, just Russian people in general. I mean, when they found out mm-hmm. I was, you know, obviously they knew we were American as soon as we opened our mouths. And just so warmly received. And just a reminder that people are people wherever mm-hmm. you go. We are all God's creation, and we all can be pressured by fear. And mm-hmm. and people live fearful lives, which is why Jesus is so important. Because with Jesus, and that fear can go away, and we rest mm-hmm. on that foundation, the real kingdom. So, yeah, we have seen that And I know your role there in the ministry of EEM has really not slowed down at all in Russia. And for me, it's not surprising. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. I would expect for things to grow. So, man, thanks for sharing a lot of that. Yeah, and know this, and to our listening audience, man, we pray daily, and we ask you to do the same thing. Pray daily for this war going on, and for the people of Ukraine, for the people of Russia. I mean, yeah, as Oleg just said, I mean, it's a confusing and scary time for everybody involved, and they're out of control. Everybody is. I mean, just very, very much out of control. So please continue if you are praying, but if you're not and you haven't been, please pray for that war going on.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm deeply encouraged, and I hope our audience is encouraged that you're able to see so many people in leadership in churches, keeping the main thing and focusing on Jesus mm-hmm. and serving people. And I think that really encourages me when we hear all sorts of things, and that is the news that is so important to keep stirring our faith, that God is still at work and he is still moving powerfully in people's lives, and he's using suffering, as he always does, to draw people mm-hmm. to himself. Mm-hmm. And I think you're speaking to that in where you live and where you work, and I find that really encouraging.
Yeah, thank you. It's encouraging to me to see our partners, those who minister to people. They go to hospitals, to orphanages, to the families with low income, you know, to villages, distant places where it's even hard to travel, because Russia is still like in the Napoleon times, when he tried to conquer Russia. He said Russia has directions but no roads. So sometimes it's hard to go to places in Russia, especially in Siberia. Yeah. But people who follow Christ, they go to those villages, to the places, I almost said God forgotten, but God never forgets people. But they go to those distant places and help people and bring Christ to them, mm-hmm. the love of God. Mm-hmm. This is what encourages me. And no matter what is going on politically, it's in the hearts of those people. And we help them to share the good news with the Bibles, because this is what they request. And I'm thrilled that Eastern European Mission is able to answer that request. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Man, that's good. And that's so true. I mean, we have to keep that focus. It's mm-hmm. our God doesn't change. And we use the phrase, man, I'm in this God forsaken place, but it's not God forsaken. Mm-hmm. God doesn't forsake any place. And I love your heart for the ministry, Oleg, and just Ilya, I mean, your son now mm-hmm. working with us as well, and Natasha, and it is a blessing and a gift to me personally to hear the interaction that you're having with the people there and just the work continuing. What's been the most challenging part of your work? Is there an area of the work that you go, man, this is a challenging, where you've really had to turn to God for strength and said, okay, God, get me through this?
Well, I guess it's obvious with the things going on politically, it's a challenge to work because we have an entity, a legal entity, a nonprofit, EEM nonprofit in Russia. And the government, of course, tries to check us. Just a week ago, I was called up to go to give some answers to the questions that the police officer had about the funds that we receive from the West. and what we spend those funds on. So, and I said, well, we have, you know, annual audits, financial audits here. You can look up, you know, all the books, all the records. No, they wanted to hear my answers and to compare. So kind of, you know, and he said, just remember, we are watching you. So we're monitoring you. So it's a, it's an obvious challenge under the circumstances. Yeah. And you never know what may happen in the future. Just there is some instability in that. But again, with God's in control, it's just one of the obstacles we can bear, I think. Another thing, since we are kind of serving not, and I coordinate the work not just in Russia, but also some countries of maybe the former Soviet Union republics, but now independent countries like Armenia and Georgia and some countries in Central Asia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan.
In your bio, that Brooke read, for our listening audience, which she may have read through that, and they're probably going, what was that word she said? Transcaucasia. I mean, that was one I had to look up. I had never heard. I was like, man, I've been in this work for 12 years, and I read that as like, Transcaucasia. I had to look that up. So, I mean, tell people what that means.
Yeah. Central Asia is obvious. It's a part of the big Asia, continent, Asian continent, but close to Russia. So it's kind of central. If we look up the map of Asia, more or less central. But Caucasia and Transcaucasia has to do with the Caucasian mountains, Caucasus. And there are different ethnic groups in different states. And Transcaucasia, it depends on where we look at the Caucasus range where we're from. So from all of us who are not in Caucasus, we may see some countries that are beyond Caucasus as Transcaucasia. So it's the whole area around Caucasus, the mountain range. So Georgia, Armenia, Azerbaijan, those countries belong to Caucasus and Transcaucasia for us, for the European and Russian part. So we look at the at that area as Transcaucasia. So I was about to say that entering and spreading our mission there, doing the mission there, it's a different mentality. It's a more oral country. It seems like pandemic would train people to do things via internet. You know, just communicating and doing stuff together. But in those areas, people want to see you face to face. And they don't want to strike a deal unless they eat with you and talk with you face to face. So it's very oral and very personal. So it's a different mentality even for Russians who tend to be also kind of in the habit of discussing things orally, but that area is especially so. Whatever you decide, you have to discuss that. I can write to a person, then I receive a phone call. Okay, let's discuss it. So, and I at first I thought, okay, just respond, you know, to me in writing, and we can discuss in writing. And no. We need to discuss it orally. So it's kind of a challenge, a little bit funny, but it's good. It just shows that we are different, and there are different countries, different peoples, and they hear things differently. They accept, perceive things differently. And it's amazing how you know, our publishing is done to meet all the needs of different cultures, because we have children Bibles and we need to have, you know, the pictures that are adequate for different cultures. It's one of the challenges, cultural challenges that I feel more and more when we expand the work and I coordinate the work, not just in Russia and in Slavic countries, but the countries with other cultural values, maybe. So that's also an interesting challenge to me.
Yeah, you work with so many different various people groups. And I think that when we say you work in Russia and Belarus, and we haven't really talked to our audience a lot about the detail of your work, it's really interesting to hear how diverse it really is.
Yes.
In the limited time we have left, we're kind of getting close to our time limit here. But man, it's been great having you on. Great hearing the stories, and I could go on and on. Just I love all the different cultural experiences that you get to experience. Mm-hmm. I guess first briefly, what would you like everyone in the U.S. to know? Maybe that they don't know about how God is moving. You know, there's always misconceptions. I mean, what might you have thought in your mind? You know, they need to understand this. I mean, is there anything that comes to mind?
Oh, I guess there could be many things, but it just crossed my mind. When I went to Armenia, the country of Armenia, again, that Transcaucasia area, you know, one of the first things they shared with me that Armenia is the first country that received Christianity officially. So it's the first Christian state in the whole world, which was amazing, even to me. I heard that it was a country with ancient roots of Christianity, but I didn't think it was the first one. I mean, just I didn't study it enough. So it was quite a revelation to me. So I guess it's important to know that some of these countries have a long history, centuries and even thousands of years. And it's very important to them. I see also what is important about the EM ministry, that it opens doors to work together with different groups of people, especially religious Christian groups. It's just amazing. I'm still amazed. When I used to be a church minister and a missionary, I always felt like I'm looked at with suspicion by other religious groups. But as a worker of EM, I share the mission of EM, and people say, oh, it's the Bible. It's about Bibles. So it's about Jesus, really. So it unites people. That is important to understand. At least I see this as a very important fact about EM that I would like everybody to know, and that we share the same conviction about Jesus, and also we share the same gospel message when we print Bibles, the New Testaments. Maybe at these times especially, I may say that a lot of people in Russia, even who are not Christians, they have no hostility against other peoples in the world. Of course, many people are affected politically and they have their convictions, but still it's people are people, like you said, Dirk. It's really just people who need salvation, who need mercy, compassion, and of course some knowledge about the truth. And this is important, again, what we do.
I might take issue with the Armenians. I mean, with the church in Antioch might have issue with that, in that that was Turkey, you know. So I don't know what they mean by the first when time period that was, but that's an interesting thing that they,
they would say we can study it.
Or you can go back to the Bible and go, well, you know, people were called Christians first in Antioch, and where's that located? That's in Turkey, you know. So, but anyway, I appreciate their passion. The fact that they were the first. That's good. Well, how can we, in our closing up, how can we pray for you?
We work in the place where it's not, there is a lack of freedom, obviously, because of the Muslim countries, because of the political situation. And so we see that it's, there are more challenges. Even in Russia, we used to have less obstacles, fewer obstacles for the ministry. Right now, there are more. So it's one of the things to pray about, the safety and the possibility to openly serve and minister and do what we do. To spread the gospel, to spread the story of Jesus. But also, I want to ask about our partners who really do a lot of ministries. And I'm amazed how they serve. So I just want to praise God for their hearts, for their dedication, and just amazing works that we see that people do in all these countries, and they are Christians. So that's basically what we need to keep in prayer.
Good, good. Yeah, pray for the boldness, pray for the continued creativity and the passion for believers. Well, buddy, it has been good to be with you. I was looking forward to this episode. Of course, I always love visiting with you. It was good seeing you in Vienna recently. It was a good time. But man, love you and appreciate you and your family and just what you mean to this mission and ministry of God's that we call EEM, because it really is. It's his mission. It's his ministry. We just get to have a front row seat at in what he's doing. So, and you are definitely on the front lines, my friend. So love you and appreciate you. If you're a first time listener to this podcast, please subscribe, hit the subscribe button and save this so you can be alerted to the next episode. Share it with other people and give us a rating, give us a review. We'd love to know what you think, whether it's good or bad. And I would love to hear back from you. So until next month, thank you all for being with us. And Oleg, especially thanks to you for being with us today. Thank you.
My pleasure.
All right.
You've been listening to the 5511 podcast, hosted by Dirk Smith and Brooke Kell. It's edited by David Wilkinson. The 5511 podcast is supported by EEM. EEM publishes, prints, and distributes Bibles and Bible-based materials in 30-plus nations and in 20-plus languages, free to all. To learn more about how you can partner with EEM, go to eem.org, and we'll leave a link for you in the show notes. We'd also love for you to rate, review, and subscribe. And of course, we'd really appreciate you telling your friends about us. So thanks for joining us. We'll be dropping a new episode the first Tuesday of every month.